Today is Sunday, March 6th, 2022. This is part 28 of Grand Canyon Oral History with Jim Haggart, last name spelled H-A-G-G-A-R-T. My name is Tom Martin. Good afternoon, Jim. How are you today?
I'm doing great, Tom. How are you?
Oh, very fine. Thank you. Thanks for asking.
Excellent.
Jim, may we have your permission to record this oral history over the telephone?
Yes, certainly.
Super. Thank you. We left off last time in 2012, and I think it's time to move forward to 2013. Where did you go in 2013?
Yeah. So in 2013, we had another fairly long wait because it wasn't until December when we did a trip. But I wanted to mention, Tom, we talked the last discussion and the one before that about the 2010-2011 period, and there was a big gap there in 2011 that, you know, I, at the time, a few weeks ago when we chatted, I couldn't remember why nothing had happened in that time. And then I realized, well, my wife reminded me that she had been sick with ovarian cancer.
Oh, my.
And so, you know, that obviously takes priority over hiking. And, you know, I relaxed with her and not necessarily relaxed, but helped her deal with that as best I could. And
nice.
So that explains that big gap there. And
yeah.
So this new trip here in 2013 was an attempt to, number one, try and catch summits. And by this time, by 2013, Art was fully, you know, he knew I wanted to get as many summits as I could. And it's too bad that he and I didn't have that attitude, you know, 25 years prior, because we probably could have knocked off a lot more sooner. But the idea was that even in the winter, when you know access is restricted to large parts of the canyon, we could probably grab a few summits by going into the Buddha temple area. And we weren't going to do Buddha itself because at the time I was only aware of the original route, which is fairly hard, about 5'8"-ish, I think. And then I didn't really know about the easier route, or I hadn't read too much about it. That's on the southeast side of Buddha. Still a technical climb, though, and Art and I were looking for non-technical climbs to do. So we figured we could backpack into the Phantom Creek area and then go up high and climb, you know, knock off a number of buttes, including Shellbuck and Manu and Clement Powell and Hillers. And there's also these fabulous red wall points that you can get to that really get you out into the canyon and for some spectacular views, Johnson Point and Sturdivant Point. So that was the objective, to go and catch all those buttes and summits and points. And so I flew down again using Art's buddy passes. Thank God Art was a pilot, right, for America West Airlines for so many years, because you know, he got me these buddy passes and I saved a fair amount of money on travel over the years. But he met me at Sky Harbor, and as was typical, we went to my mother's house and got gear because I would store gear there, and visited with her, and then got some food items because there's always an issue with bringing beef jerky across the international border. You have to be careful about those kinds of things.
Oh, so, interesting.
Yeah, and he can't fly with, you know, butane or propane or anything like
right. That,
so you got to buy fuel cartridges and. Yeah, all the miscellaneous shopping that has to get done. So, you know, we headed up in the afternoon to Flagstaff, and we stayed again with our friends Bruce and Dewart, who we've talked about many times, in their place there. And so in the morning then, this would have been on the 17th of December, excuse me, we got up and left Flag about 6:30. There was a little bit of snow on the ground, but which was kind of, you know, auspicious, I think, considering what happened on the trip, but it was pretty much deserted on the highway. It's like sometimes when you're traveling in northern Arizona, you have the highway just totally to yourself, and it's kind of interesting when that happens because it's quite a contrast. I remember it used to be like that in the 70s, you
right.
know, when you'd be driving from Flag to the North Rim. I mean, sorry, to the Grand Canyon Village. And you know, if you're going in the evening, you might see one car in that whole 75-mile run, you know. And anyways, it's less common these days. And this time it was really unusual, I guess, because of, you know, the pre-season, pre-holiday season. Like, maybe not too many people are out.
Right.
Because they're getting ready to go on vacation, you know, during Christmas. In any event, that was it. So we drove into the village and parked at the village square. And so they had the shuttle there. And but the Yavapai Lodge was closed, and so even the parking lot there at Village Square, I think that's where the Babbitt store is and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Even that was virtually deserted. You know, it was really peculiar. So we took the shuttle over to Yavapai Point, and started down the South Kaibab, and had an uneventful descent down to the Phantom Ranch. But I did mention a couple weeks ago that in one of our previous hikes, we had gone down the South Kaibab and run into this trail construction crew, and that was there. And it was quite a big crew at that time. I guess this was in 2010. They had about 8 people, I guess, on that crew. But this time we met 2 guys who were doing actually some jackhammering on the trail. And so it was kind of interesting. It was just the 2 of them, and they had a portable jackhammer down there just, I guess, improving the rock work on the trail. And it's always interesting to run into these people and actually see, you know, maintenance being undertaken on these trails, because you don't normally see that, right? All you see is people walking down them and mules going up them, and you realize it takes a lot of work to keep these trails, these maintained trails, in good shape. So,
yes.
Anyways, we headed down, and I remember on the descent, when you get to the tip-off there, you drop down over the Tapeets, and you start down through the Precambrian, right? And I remember there's a long, well, everybody knows this, you'll remember, there's a long loop where you go out around a point of Hakatai Shale, I think it is.
Yep.
And when you come back, as you're going down now, and you loop back to the east, I was able to pick out really distinctly old trail that goes up through that Precambrian sequence, and so it's to the east, right, of the current trail, and so I think what it is that the current trail it starts up from the river trail at where it does, and at some point the original trail continued straight up. Whereas the modern trail must loop, starts the big loop around and goes at a more gentle gradient on that big loop around the Hakatai Shale and then up the final switchbacks to the Tapeets. But it was really interesting to be able to see all this trail construction and old trail construction. And I think it may be because there may be people like me and you who are seeing these old bits of trail, and they're checking them out, you know.
Right.
Unfortunately, we did not have the time to check them out, but certainly something to do the next time I'm in there with a half a day to kill, right?
Yeah,
check it out, because I think it's really fascinating to find these old bits of trail and see how they laid them out, you know. The engineering on these old trails was sometimes quite spectacular and well considered, we've talked about this before, and I just really, it's disappointing to me when people take these old trails that the prospectors or some other engineers or you know, Aboriginals laid out, and then, you know, the modern hikers tend to just cut down through them rather than following the intricate switchbacks that were constructed. So that hasn't happened yet on that old trail on the South Kaibab, so there are no switchbacks, you know, cutting scars that I could see, so that'll be a lot of fun to check out in the future.
Cool.
Anyways. Yeah. So, so we stopped at we always stop at Phantom Ranch for, you know, a check of things and to get a good rest there. And we also wanted to get water because we were going to head up now. The plan was to go up to the Texas Flat area and then use that approach to get into Phantom and then go up onto the high country from there. So we filled up our water bottles, and there was a ranger who was giving a lecture to a few people, we watched them for a few minutes. I remember thinking about this, but eventually we had to pack up and leave. And so we started up the trail, I've been on this trail now, the trail up to Texas Flat out of the Bright Angel Campground, I don't know, five, six times over the decades. And mm-hmm. the first time was in like 73 or 4, and there really was no trail. There was just a route.
Right.
And it's pretty impressive now the way the trail has been established. You know, many people must hike this.
Yep.
And so it's, it's nice because it you can move really quickly on it now. You can make a lot of elevation gain quite quickly. And we were up on top of the Pete's, I think, within about an hour of leaving Bright Angel Campground. So that's with our packs on, too, you know, and full load of water.
And,
so
and that's the Utah Flats route up Piano Alley. Is that, are those the terms that are used for that? It's not on a map, but it's just...
No, it's not on the map, and I've never heard the term Piano Alley, so
okay.
I'm not
right.
sure where that came from. That'd be an interesting
okay.
thing to check out. But yeah, it just leaves at the you know where the campground is on
right.
the west side of Bright Angel Creek.
Right.
Right at the north end of the campground.
Right.
You just head up right there. I mean, you'll see the
the northernmost campsite. The trail leaves the campsite there.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's steep. It's not a main. It's not a formally laid out trail. It's just
that's right.
You know, it's just a scrambler's trail that many people have used, and it's steep. And I remember it's getting quite eroded now. You know, there are places where the water is running down where the hikers go, and it's eroding out and whatnot. But
okay.
you know, it's still. I wonder at some point, you know, in the future, maybe in 40 years, if the Park Service will say, well, I think it's time for us to maybe formalize this trail, you know,
mm-hmm.
put in a formal trail.
Right.
And then they'll do what they did with the South Kaibab there, and they'll put in a nice big, you know, loop around some little hill, you know, and eventually people will look over and see the old original, the old original Piano Alley
and wondering,
route.
What's that?
You know? So, yeah. Yeah. Another place you can see that is at the bottom of the Bright Angel Trail when you come down below Garden Creek.
Right.
You know, it's called the Devil's
Corkscrew.
Corkscrew, that's it. And you can see the original trail there.
That's right.
Yeah. And you're not supposed to hike up that, but
right.
some people do, I think. So anyways, we got up to Texas Flat and proceeded along the trail. And again, the trail's good all the way into Phantom Creek. You know, it used to be you had to pick your way through the flats and with the sage and agave, but you can make pretty good time now, and which is nice to see. And I know, of course, people do things like ISIS in a day, you know,
right.
and they're obviously taking advantage of these quick access trails that have gone in the past 40, 50 years. So, we followed the trail around and then eventually dropped down into Phantom. And it was getting kind of late in the afternoon by this time. So, and it's December too, right? So we don't have a particularly long day. And we knew we could get out of Phantom by walking upstream a little ways. Because we're down in the Tapeets now. And we needed to get out on the east side of the creek. So whereas we'd come down on the west side of the creek. So... We did this. We walked upstream and found a break through some ledges and then found a really splendid little campsite right on in the bed of this wash on the Tapete sandstone ledges really nice spot. And I remember it being one of the best sleeps I've ever had in a canyon.
Wow.
You know, it wasn't too cold, beautiful stars, and just like when you're really tired and beat and you have a great night's sleep, you really appreciate it. So, but anyways, the next morning we actually realized that we could have gotten out. We saw in the better daylight, we saw that there were a couple of breaks on the east side of Phantom Creek that we could have actually gotten out farther downstream. saving us this jaunt, you know, upstream. Hmm. But no matter, it's no big deal. You just save that away for a future trip, right? And so we continued around, and so we're heading now into the drainage between Shellbach Butte and Sturtevant Point. So this is a long drainage, north-south trending drainage, very straightforward walking up through the red wall, and scrambling, I should say, not walking. So pretty much uneventful. And so we got up to basically the top of the red wall and dropped our packs. And so at that point, we said, let's go out to Sturtevant Point. Mm. Now, Sturtevant is about 2 miles to the south. But fortunately, it's just a flat walk on top of the red wall. So,
right.
You know, it's just it goes quite quickly. And I think it took us like an hour and 10 minutes, something like that, to cover that 2 miles.
Nice.
And there's a tremendous view from Sturtevant. I recall, you know, that you get this tremendous view down into Phantom and Bright Angel Canyons.
Nice.
And one thing that really stood out in my mind when we saw it from Sturtevant was we could see, I could see the route that my friends Chris Beal and Sarah Baum and I took, I think it was in 82, when we came out, we had to climb out of Phantom Canyon because a big rock fall in the canyon had blocked our way going downstream. And I don't know if we talked about this in the earlier hikes, but in 82, we went, the three of us had gone in there ostensibly to climb ISIS, so we didn't make it.
Okay.
But we went in on the Texas Flat Trail, the same way Art and I went in on this particular hike. And when we were leaving the basin, we decided we would just hike down Phantom Creek to Bright Angel Creek and then continue that way.
Right.
So we got about halfway down the creek, and you're well into the Precambrian there, and there'd been this rock fall, and it had dammed up the creek so that we had to actually swim and wade across the creek carrying our packs. And, you know, in the frigid winter, cold, I remember that, stripping down and then crossing the creek, you know, to keep everything dry. And it was so cold, and we had to, because of the rock falls blocking the route downstream, we had to climb all the way up out of the valley above the Tapeets to get back to the Texas Flat Trail.
I think you
Anyways,
mentioned
my
that.
Point is,
yeah, I think
you know, it was quite an epic. It was one of these change of plans, right? That's
yeah.
totally unforeseen, and you have to figure out how to get around it. So we did. We managed that, and at the time, and but the thing is, from Sturtevant Point, I could see every little bit of that that route out. You know, and it's interesting because it seems to me, from what I can gather, I haven't done a traverse of Lower Phantom Creek since that time, but people talk about going up it. I have a feeling that rockfall dam that created this small reservoir in Phantom Creek must have washed away,
possibly.
You know,
yeah.
in the intervening decades, because I'm not aware of any of that dam still there and the the lake behind it. So it's pretty interesting because it shows you how these features, which seem so prominent at the time, can seemingly quickly be removed by Mother Nature, you
right.
know.
Right.
They happen overnight, and then they disappear a few months later. So
that's right.
Anyways, just an aside there. Just telling people that if you want a spectacular view of the canyon, get out to Sturtevant.
Sturtevant
Point,
Point's
right?
the place
yeah.
to go.
Yeah. So anyways, we packed up our day pack gear and then headed back to the packs, and the route from here. So to get to our objective was to climb up to the Supai Ridge that forms the divide between this drainage, which we informally called Sturtevant Creek, Sturtevant Drainage, and Haunted Canyon on the west. There's a so you get up onto the Supai Ridge there, and that ridge ultimately goes to the southwest towards Shellbach Butte.
Okay.
And then you can work your way along the Supai to the northeast and get up into the Manu Temple area. So that was our plan. And we climbed up then through the Supai. And it's really interesting. There was You know, interesting route finding there. We didn't think it was going to be technical, and it wasn't. I mean, we negotiated it all without a rope, but there was some rope hanging on one of the cliffs, and you know, probably used it as a handhold or here or there, but I don't remember. But interesting route finding, right? And as you know, Shellbach has been recently named, and I guess there had been a number of parties that have been up there just before us. As we found out, because when we got to the saddle there at the top of this Supai climb, we dropped our packs and then walked out to Shellbach and to get our first summit of the peak of the trip. And again, people had been up on Shellbach in 2012. I think it was in the spring of 2012, and I think it may have been the party that was commemorating the naming of Shellbach Butte,
okay,
which is, of course, one of the Park Service rangers. I think he passed away in a...
Yeah.
He did pass away, but I think...
Louis Shellbach was the chief interpretation for decades, I think, at Grand Canyon National Park.
Okay, well, I'm glad you... I was fishing for some background information about Louis Shellbach, and you perfectly inserted that into the discussion there. So, anyways, this peak had been recently named, and there's a big plaque up there now. Somebody had gone to a lot of trouble to bring this up and mount it, and you know, it's kind of interesting that it's there and whatnot. So we kind of spent some time there. This trip. You know, on this day, of the trip, the winds picked up, and I won't say they were really ripping winds, but it was just enough that in December, it was really kind of chilly and cold. You couldn't sit around for very long, unless you were in the direct sun and protected from the wind, and particularly if you had any sweat on, you know, you'd be chilled so quickly. So we couldn't really spend a lot of time relaxing on this trip, and we had to keep moving just to stay warm.
Mm.
So we retraced our steps back down from Shellbach Butte and back to our packs, and then we were heading. You know, the plan then was to continue to the northeast to get up towards Manu, and the route is kind of complicated from there. You go to the southeast, and then you get into a gully where you can climb up to the north. And once you get up above this pinnacle of Supai, you drop down again. And these were route description directions that we obtained from the Tamazi volume.
Okay.
And climbing volume. And Tamazi describes it pretty well, I think. But when you drop down, as I pointed out, from this mini saddle, we went down pretty far. And we had to do some climbing in the gully to get around some boulders and chalk stones and whatnot. But we managed it, and we thought, well, we're on route because here's the ledge that we now have to follow to the northeast to eventually go up to the saddle by Manu. And so we start along this ledge, and it's kind of snow-covered, dusted here and there. Not heavy snow, but light enough. And we went a few hundred meters, 15 or 20 minutes, and all of a sudden, it just cliffs out, right?
Wow.
So it's like, wow, we screwed up somewhere. So we figured it must have been that we came down this gully too far, right? So we backtracked, following our steps, and got back into the gully and went up a couple of Supai cliffs to the next one that looked attractive, that looked like it extended far enough to the northeast to give us passage, and we started along that, and that one actually turned out to be the right one. So,
okay.
Don't go down very far from the saddle. Here's a place where a nice cairn would have been useful, right?
We talked about where there wasn't one. Yeah,
there wasn't
they're
one.
Everywhere
no,
where you
not.
Don't need them, and they're not there where you do need them.
Exactly. But, my feeling on all this is it's better to have had the adventure and find the route, than it is to have it all laid out in front of you. So So we were happy nonetheless, just to be back on, you know, on the right route. And so yeah, we followed the ledge along, and this time it worked out, and it took us to a long talus that got us up pretty much all the way through the Supai. And then there was one more obstacle that Tomasi had talked about, and we actually came across it, and there were these ropes hanging down the uppermost Supai cliff here before the notch. And we thought, there's no way, you know, we want to climb up this stuff, because it looked pretty, it looked a lot more technical than just a hand line, right? And so we were really getting kind of bummed out, because we were thinking we'd have to reverse the whole route, you know, back down into Phantom Creek. And then I said, well, let's just go follow the ledge as far as we can and see what happens. And we get to the end, you know, as far as we can, and there's a simple walk up there. So it was interesting how, you know, again, you just poke around a little bit, and all of a sudden an easy way is revealed. You know, this has happened so many times. I've mentioned this in our discussion so many times that, you know, you think you found the only way, and then you just check around the corner, and there's something that's quite a bit easier.
Right.
So
So
anyways, yeah, so anybody who's going up that way again, just keep walking the ledge, and you'll eventually get to a third-class scramble. So anyways, we got up. This now took us up to the saddle that was between Manu and Buddha. It's a big, open, flat ridge, and really spectacular place. But we had low clouds scudding by. You know, it was in the 30s, and kind of blustery, and wasn't the best of weather. So we wanted to keep moving, and we thought, well, before we camp up here, we'll knock off Manu. And so we dropped our packs and then headed north to Manu, and it's an easy walk along the open slopes, and then you get to the south side of Manu, and Manu's a Coconino limestone, Coconino sandstone butte.
Okay.
Maybe with some Torweep on the top. I can't recall, but it's all the major climbing is in the Coconino, and it's well described in the guidebooks that exist. And we went up it, and we had some fun with it for sure. And Art, who's a much stronger third classer than I did, he went up the crux, what I consider the crux, without any problem. But I felt like I wanted a rope, and we had one with us in case we had to rappel or for these kinds of situations. So he tossed me down the rope, and there's a big flake that one has to climb up, and you kind of like lay back it, and it's not very difficult, but it is exposed. And so with the rope, I just scrambled it right up behind Art, and we continued on to the summit. So again, a summit where there'd been a few ascents, and you know, a number of people had been up there, and it's interesting to see that people are getting into these remote areas and doing the climbs. So, but pretty late in the afternoon in December, so we quickly reversed the route, and we actually wrapped down that flake, and then continued back to our packs, which were closer to Buddha, and we found a nice pinion there and set up Art's tarp because we figured it was likely going to snow or precip of some sort. And it's a good thing we did, because we got about 4 inches overnight. And it's the kind of snow where you don't really it kind of creeps up on you. You don't really hear it, you know. Just it's coming down so light, and you're sleeping so soundly that you know, you get up in the morning and you look out under the edge of the tarp, and wow, there's all this snow out there. So it was it's kind of interesting, you know, exciting that this had happened. And because it was cool and snowy, and we were of course in the fog at this point, we just kind of laid around the tent for a little while, or under the tarp in our sleeping bags, and relaxed. But eventually, after about a half an hour, it started to break up, and so we said, okay, let's get going. And and then, you know, what this weather that we'd had kind of dogging us for a couple of days, you know, this cold, blustery overcast weather just turned into glorious sunshine.
Wow.
Very quickly, you know, this burned off. The sun was there, the wind dropped, and so all the snow that had accumulated was quickly burning off, you know. And so we weren't going to try to do Buddha, as I mentioned earlier, because that's too technical. But we did want to climb Clement Powell and Hillers.
Okay.
So to get there, we had to traverse the Supai sandstone cliff that we were on, pretty much the highest one, the Esplanade Sandstone. Traverse along that, below the east face of Buddha, and then get on the ridge that's east of Buddha Temple, leading out to Clement Powell. And we could see from where we'd camped and along that traverse that we were going to have to make a pretty big rappel. And we had planned for this, right? Art had spent a lot of time, as he always does, scoping out these routes.
Hmm.
And so we had brought an 8-mil rope and a 5-mil rope, 100 feet each. And it turns out that this rappel, this drop, was 100 feet.
Wow.
And it was perfect. And it was just overhanging or vertical the whole way.
Hmm.
And so a really spectacular rappel. And, it, you know, one of those rappels where you just slide off the rope at the end.
Wow.
You know? And
just enough rope.
What's that?
Just enough rope.
Just enough rope. And you know, I guess, well, I'm not going to go into the technicalities of it, but it was just a fun rappel off a big ponderosa pine. So that got us down now to the next Supai ledge down, and this is the one that basically is at the base of Clement Powell. So we walked just a little bit to the east below the Supai cliff that we'd rappelled, and then out to the notch by Clement Powell, and we drop our packs there, and we, you know, put together our little day pack jaunts, and I remember thinking, well, this should be about 45-minute round trip, right? So we start up, and Clement Powell is kind of interesting. You go to the along the north side initially, and then there's an easy scramble up through the lowermost Supai cliff, and then you come back around to the southwest, and get onto the southwest face, and there's a number of options there. And we walked past a couple of cracks. We tried one, tried going up one. And, again, we're doing this without a rope. We have a rope for rappel if we need it.
In the snow.
And we kept thinking, well, it's got to be easier than this, you know. And so we went to the far end of this little ledge. It kept getting smaller and smaller. And we did some scrambling up some steep gullies. And it looked like we might be able to get on our bellies and crawl along a short ledge in the Supai to get around the corner, but thought, this cannot be the way.
Hmm.
You know, this cannot be the way. And so we backed up, and we went to the first crack that we had passed by, and we said, well, this has got to be it, because it's obviously the most straightforward thing. And quite honestly, we gave it our try and just did not have the nerve. So I even put on the rope to try and lead it, and I remember trying to thread a chalk stone in this crack to try and get some protection, but he couldn't even do that.
Wow.
And that's the way. It's a third class route, and it's just that we didn't have the nerve to do it that day.
Hmm. Well, with the snow on board too.
Yeah, the snow, but the snow wasn't on this climb, right?
Okay.
It wasn't on this face at that time, because this is southwest facing. It was in the sun.
Oh,
It was quite. I appreciate you giving me an out, but that, you know, I try to be honest about these things.
I just think, you know, things are wet, which means that they move more.
Yeah. There's all sorts of reason, but it comes down to cojones mostly. So, anyways, we backed off of it, and a little disappointing, but that's the way it goes,
yep.
You know. And of course, whenever this happens, I immediately start thinking, oh, man, now I got to plan another trip in here, you know. So we reversed the route back to our packs. And by the way, that took 3.5 hours. We were expecting 45 minutes round trip, right? And it took us 3.5 hours to do all that exploration and finally back off.
Mm.
So we really gave it the college try to get up this thing. So anyways, so from there, we headed south, then following the ridge down the ridge of Supai that heads out towards Hiller's Butte. And it's easy walking, and then eventually you get to like a 30-foot drop, and which we repelled. I think you could probably scramble up it pretty straightforwardly, but we had the rope, and we just figured we'd expedite things and rappel it. So we did that, and then we said, well, this is a great place to camp, right below that that particular rappel, because it's a wide open flat with a few pinyons on it and junipers, and so we dropped our packs, and we thought, well, we've got enough time to climb Hiller's now, because Hiller's is a small little Supai Butte, a little bit to the south, and we knew from the Tamazi guidebook that, you know, where the route was, and figured it would be a piece of cake. So we walked south to Hiller's, and then walked around the west face, which is sheer, and then and we knew we expected that. And then got to the south side, and there's a picture in Tamazi's guidebook. If you look at it, you'll see this climber going up this real grainy, it's a real grainy photo, going up this kind of wide chimney gully. And so we saw this thing, you know. Hmm. The problem is there's like a 12-foot cliff between us and the chimney.
Ooh.
And so, you know, we poked around, and we just could not commit again to doing that initial, entry cliff. And so, again, you know, here it was, second time for the day, you know, we backed off another summit. So, I don't know what to say. These things happen.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm pretty experienced, but sometimes I get kicked pretty heavily by old Grand Canyon. So we backed off, and then we headed back to our pack, and again set up the fly because we thought we might have some bad weather, and there was a little bit of graupel during the night, but that was it. Nothing accumulated, and at least we had a good sleep, right? So from that point, the next morning, then we're trying to get down. I mean, kind of disappointing so far to back off of two summits, you know, and so we wanted to get back down to Bright Angel Creek, and the plan was to drop down the Johnson Point route. So Johnson Point is a big red wall point that's south of Buda and Hiller's, and it's kind of directly east of Sturtevant Point, where we had hiked out to a few days prior, right? So first thing we had to do was get down through the Supai. So we left our camp, and we could see a pretty straight, you know, pretty obvious rappel point east of Hiller's Butte that would get us through the main Supai cliff that was obstructing us. And so we worked over to that, and it was there's a small pinion there that we used as a rappel anchor, and it's very interesting, Tom, because right above the rappel anchor we used, we found a pair of kind of rotted, sun-bleached climbing shoes.
Huh.
Very interesting. I guess somebody had dropped them accidentally, you know. And because why would you, you know, you would never leave a pair like that
right. In
the middle of nowhere.
Hmm.
And so it was just, you know, these were, I don't know what kind of shoes they were. I don't remember now. They definitely were, climbing shoes because they're very recognizable. So very interesting to run across that kind of flotsam in the canyon, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm sure it was accidental that somebody dropped it, but there it was. So anyways, we rigged the rappel and dropped down, and then had just a delightful walk down through the red wall of Johnson Point. And Johnson, it doesn't have quite the view that Sturtevant has.
Hmm.
I mean, it's still pretty nice because it sticks way out into the canyon on this projecting ridge. But you can't really see too many of the details down in Bright Angel Canyon or in Phantom Canyon, and certainly not as much as you can from Sturtevant Point. So,
okay.
But the nice thing about Johnson Point is it's a route through the Red Wall, and it gets you down to the Tonto, and it's pretty spectacular too, because you have to the ridge that you go down it just, I mean, it's a lot, it got a lot of air below it. And, and you start going over these vertical drops that you can easily down climb, you know, facing in and to the next ledge. And then you'll walk out a little bit, 10, 12 feet, and there'll be another vertical drop. And, and you keep negotiating these, but the horizontal ledges keep getting smaller and smaller, right? So that, you know, eventually you're at a point and you're looking out and there's like, there's no more ledges down there, that intermediate ledges. And so at that point you do a nice, well, we just started poking around and to the west of the ridge, and there were several gullies that, that, you know, were options. We picked the first one and, you know, scrambling down through chimneys and steep gullies, and eventually you get onto a horizontal ledge that took us on a traverse over to a big talus slide. So it worked out just fine, and it was very one of those, you know, route finding experiences where you you got to keep looking, and but the answers always pop up right there. It's a lot of fun to do those. So from that point, yeah, it was kind of straightforward going from there. We had been through here a few years prior. I think in 2009, we had camped at a red wall boulder just below Johnson Point when we went from Brahma Temple and Deva Temple area. We had been up there, and we came down by Wall Creek, and then crossed by Angel Creek and came up the cattle trail, stock trail to get to below Johnson Point, and had camped at a prominent boulder of redwall that's right out by the Tepeach Rim. And from my 2009 notes, I had made some suggestions or noted the possibility that there might be a Tepeach route there, and that we could use then to drop down quickly into Bright Angel Canyon. So we looked at that. And it was obviously no going, right? So we had to backtrack to the north, and we didn't go all the way to the north following the trail because we'd learned about this canyon that's just east of Johnson Point that one can get down through the Tepeach and then follow a very steep route down through the Precambrian to get to the bed of Bright Angel Canyon.
Okay.
And I think this was in Tomasi's notes. I'm not sure, but anyways, it's a very it kind of circuitous with a good deer trail through the Tepeach, and then you have to keep looking all the way, and it's very steep and very loose, and so you have to be very careful. In other words, no big deal, but it took us some time to get down to the bed of Bright Angel Creek, and so from there, then we just followed the creek down and got our lemonades at Phantom Ranch. And you know, we knew we were going to be late getting out, and so for this reason we figured we'd go up the Bright Angel Trail to the village rather than the Kaibab. But I think typically we tend to go up the Kaibab because it's faster, shorter, right? So you can make faster time, and when you're heading out. But in the winter time especially, you got to be aware of those shuttles, right?
Right.
And so they pretty much shut off by like a half hour after dusk or something like that. And so we figured, well, to be on the safe side, we better go up the Bright Angel Trail.
Mm.
And so that's the way we ended the trip. And just kind of an uneventful walk up, but, you know, always fun to do. So, all in all, pretty nice trip. And again, I think I mentioned last time that Art and I had gotten into the habit of going to the motels, right, on our trips. And so this was when we got off this hike, it was like 9 o'clock in the evening. And I said, no, none of this driving back to Phoenix tonight, you know, we're going to get a nice hotel room. So we did that in the village. That's a nice thing about Tucson Village in December. There's always room,
yes,
you know? so yeah, a really great trip. And, you know, some nice summits, no question about that. There's just not as many as I'd hoped to get, and but still a fun time and lots of great stuff to see with my friend Art. So.
Yeah, incredible views too.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
Johnson Sturtevant.
Yeah, that Sturtevant Point is kind of a special place. You know, I these Redwall points, are sometimes so unique in their, I shouldn't say so many of them are unique, but they're very special in that they sometimes they project way out into the canyon from a central area like a larger butte complex, and you follow these projections of redwall out, and sometimes they get quite narrow, and when you get out there, it's like you're kind of, you know, surrounded 360 degrees by the open expanse of the canyon.
A lot of air.
Yeah, a lot of air. It's really kind of neat. I mean, sometimes you get like on Hall Butte's another one, I think, for some reason. That one doesn't even stick out that far. But you walk out there and, you know, not only do you see, you look across the south rim and you see buttes and summits and mesas below you there, but then you turn around 180 degrees and you look to the north and you see all these buttes and mesas and summits there. So really, really neat places to get to. So I really, and they don't require so much technical climbing to get to a flat redwall point, right? So,
right.
You know, maybe some future climbers or hikers can set that as their suite of summits that they want to collect. You know, all the redwall points.
That'll keep people busy for a long time.
It would, yeah. There's a lot of them for sure, and quite often many of those require, you know, significant third class scrambling to get to. So.
And days of walking.
Yeah. Like one I want to get to is out in the western part of the canyon towards Bass, and that's Shaler Plateau.
Hmm.
And so this is a flat redwall summit that is above Turquoise Canyon.
Oh.
And, you know, it's like you have to get down into Turquoise, find a way up out of Turquoise,
right,
and then walk about 4 miles to the north along really awkward, steep redwall rim to get to Shaler Plateau.
Hmm.
Unless there's a route down from Wallapai Point, and I think there might be, so that's an option to think about. But yeah, some of these places are very remote and require significant effort to get to.
Cool.
Yeah, so I hope that, any questions, class?
No, and it's just an uneventful trip back to Phoenix and then back up to Canada.
Yeah. Well, I always spend a few days in Phoenix visiting with my family, or usually anyways, you know, assuming the time is there. And you know, in those days, I was very fortunate to be able to visit with my mother. She passed away a couple of years ago, so that doesn't happen anymore. But I still have two sisters, too, that live in the Phoenix area. So,
oh, cool.
And their families are growing. So there's always reason to stay there, you know,
nice,
a little bit longer. But, of course, you got to get back to home, too. So,
yep, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, maybe with that, we will put a comma in this interview series. Is there anything else about this journey that you wanted to bring into this?
Nothing in particular. I did mention, you know, about Shellbach Butte early on, and Shellbach was a butte that had just been named before we did it. And you know, in the future, Tom, we might want to talk about my efforts to get Butchert Butte named.
That's a great idea.
That was a significant little project in its own right for me, and maybe we could talk about that next time.
Let's do that. That's a great idea.
Okay.
Cool. I'm just writing this down. Butchert Butte next time. Okay. Super. Well, excellent. With that, then, let's go ahead and conclude part 28, Grand Canyon Oral History Interview with Jim Haggart. Today is Sunday, March 6th, 2022. My name is Tom Martin. Jim, thank you so very much.
Thank you, Tom. It's always a pleasure.
Indeed. All right.